How many Ferengi does it take to change a light bulb?
I don't know, Adam. How many Ferengi does it take to change a light bulb?
Two. One for changing it, and another one to sell the broken one.
Shut up, Wesley!
That's actually better than the one I came up with. How many Q does it take to change a light bulb?
How many?
Two. One changes it into a starship-eating razor beast, and the other one comes along and tells him he needs to stop messing with the humans.
Welcome to another episode of the Final Frontier Podcast. I'm Adam Mullen, and with me today is my co-host and my interviewee, Bill Allen.
Hello, how we doing?
All right, so the question of the week, this was submitted by Steve Atwell. Thank you, Steve. What was the name of Captain Kirk's nephew that almost died? Was it George, Sam, Peter, or David?
Ooh, jeez. Okay, I gotta wait till the end to answer it, don't I?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Steve likes to pick hard questions.
Yeah, and you know, I feel doubly bad because I'm pretty sure there was a fan film that actually had that character on it at some point. So I really should know this twice.
So we'll come back to this later. All right. So now, are you ready for the interview?
I am ready for the interview.
All right. So, Bill, you're making a fan film. What is this fan film? What's the title?
Currently, it doesn't have a title. I'm trying to come up with the appropriate. I think I want to call it Starship with an exclamation point.
Like Airplane?
Like Airplane, yes. Yeah. Because what I'm trying to do, I'm trying to make, although that might be too grandiose a goal, I'm trying to make the Airplane of fan films. I'm trying to make the Attack of the Killer Tomatoes of fan films, or the Hardware Wars of fan films.
So can you tell us what it's going to be about?
Yes. There was an old one of the classic original series episodes introduced a character, Captain Garth of Izar, who was, during some war in the Federation's past, was a brilliant tactician and great leader and outmaneuvered the enemy and saved the Federation. And after the war, he got mangled on an away mission, and friendly aliens fixed him up, gave him the ability to shapeshift, and the process drove him nuts. And he ended up locked in a loony bin where he tried to switch places with Captain Kirk. And he was just one of those little one-off villains for that episode. And there have been a couple of fan films dealing with Captain Garth that have been made. Mm-hmm. And they all play it straight. Oh, he's a brilliant genius, and he won the war. I got to thinking about it, and it's like, well, the big one I can think of is Prelude to Axanar, and it was a good film. I mean, it looked good. It was a clever little gimmick they did with that whole documentary thing, and I liked it. But story-wise, it was kind of flat. He's smarter than them. He's got the better, faster ship. He wins the fight. Mm-hmm. There's no conflict. There's no surprise. There's nothing new that really twists things up and gives you something interesting to look at. It's fairly ho-hum. And I got to thinking, there's got to be a way to make this story better. And I got to thinking, what if the aliens didn't drive Garth insane? What if he was always insane? there's a quote. There's a few different versions of the quote, and I'm going to paraphrase them all kind of together. During World War II, various Allied and Axis commanders said about Americans, basically, it's like you can't. Their tactics are always superior to yours because they're all bat crap crazy. You can't outthink an American because you have no idea what they're going to do next because they don't know what they're going to do next. So I got to thinking, what if you made it that way? What if Captain Garth wasn't a genius? What if he was always just insane? But he was so insane, it's like that plan is so crazy, it just might work. And it did work. And so the enemy started believing he was a brilliant tactician when he's just completely Fruit Loops.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd been watching a lot of MASH reruns, and I've been reading the Schlock Mercenary webcomic and all these things that are funny. And there's not a lot of funny in Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in the series, you have some humorous episodes and there's always some witty banter, but in the fan films themselves, it's very, very rare. I've seen a handful of good ones. What was it? The Hunt, where the guy's haunted by that laughing dog.
Yeah.
Or the one we talked about a few weeks ago, the whole gag about the captain's chair. You broke the captain's chair. That's why you're being reassigned. You know, I mean, and those are great. I love that. And it's like, but then you look at something like Star Trek Continues, which is, you know, Phase 2 or New Voyages and Continues are pretty much the, you know, top tier of fan films. These guys devoted years to it and painstakingly recreated as many details as possible and were trying so hard to capture that feel of the original series. And for the most part, they got it. But they got the drama side of it, but the humor side is always lacking. You don't get the witty banter is not as good between Kirk and McCoy. And I'm not trying to bash anybody making this kind of stuff. It's just everybody focuses on the drama, mm-hmm. on the personal growth, on the self-improvement. Nobody laughs. Nobody laughs. Everybody takes it too seriously. So I am making a very, very ridiculous, low budget, no budget, negative number budget, bad movie. I want this thing to be horrible. I want every goofy, silly, ridiculous gag I can think of crammed into this film. And basically the plot runs like this. Starfleet Command knows Garth is crazy. And for propaganda purposes, they're putting out public notices that he's a brilliant genius who's outmaneuvering the Klingons. And the Klingons have diverted an elite task force specifically to find and destroy Captain Garth. And the problem is the Federation doesn't know where he is. He wandered off to look for a giant space dragon, and they've lost him. So Section 31, the head of Section 31 contacts the head of Starfleet Command and says, I'll send my operatives out and we will find Garth. So the movie is going to be the various reports and hijinks and misadventures of like the aftermath of what Garth did when he appointed a dog to be the head of a colony. Yeah, the original governor of the colony allowed it to be captured by Klingons. So Garth said he was not fit for the job, so he promoted the dog to governorship.
I like
and
this.
Sir, we were going to replace him, but his interstellar trade policies are very progressive, and the voters seem to like him. You know, so it's going to be hijinks and hilarity. I may not even have a Captain Garth in this film, just people reporting on the crazy things he's done.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
And it'll all just be random gags.
Mm-hmm.
And the point is the Federation's trying to find Garth and save him before the Klingons find him and kill him. Because as long as Garth is alive, they can say, look, he's a hero and he's a genius. And the Klingons will still be thinking he's the tactical brilliant mind behind everything so that they're not trying to kill Captain April or whoever the real genius is.
Mm-hmm. So you've shown me a very funny reenactment of the Gorn fight scene from the arena.
Yes.
Is this a part of this film?
Yes. That's going to be a part of the film. It's not Kirk versus Gorn. It's Section 31 operative versus Gorn. He went to a planet where he heard Garth had been and runs into a spot of trouble. I don't know if we'll put a link to that on the, because I should probably post that to YouTube so it's easier to link together, because it's on Facebook right now. I'll figure out how to get it on YouTube.
Okay.
But essentially what it is it's me in a red shirt, and I am engaged in very, very uncorded fisticuffs with someone in one of those giant inflatable T-Rex costumes. Yes. My
and
wife.
You have the, your wife.
Yes, my wife really, really, really wanted one of those. She watched those videos, like I think the one T-Rex doing dishes, T-Rex mowing the lawn. She sees those videos and she just laughs uproariously and she gets the giggles. She's like, that looks like so much fun. So one year I bought her the costume, and then when weather's nice, she puts it on and frolics around outside. So we decided we were going to use that to record a fight scene.
That's great. And you have the original fight music playing while you're doing your reenactment, yes?
Yeah, what we did was we brought out a tablet and brought up a YouTube clip from I think we used the mock time music more than we used the arena music.
That
fight
okay.
between Kirk and Spock. And we just basically played that video while the two of us wrestled around in the backyard. And it was like held below with a phone that was filming this. So this was filmed on a cell phone with a tablet providing the audio effects and a giant inflatable T-Rex costume.
But hey, it works. It's that's pretty low budget.
Yeah. I showed it to Vance Major because he's, you know, Mr. Cord in the door, and he almost wet his pants from laughing. So yes, I count that as a win.
So all these times that your wife goes out in her T-Rex costume and frolics, can you please tape some of that for us and then add that to like the very end while you have your credits rolling? We just see the T-Rex, and then maybe you can get another one and you can be in it, and then you can hold hands and frolic down the street. And
like
maybe
into
like
the
you
sunset.
Have people,
yes.
Yeah, into the sunset, you have cars drive by and they're like, you know, yelling at you, honking at you. Yeah, I would like to see that.
I do have video somewhere of her skimming the pool.
See, that will work nicely.
I'll have to see if I can dig that up and use that in my credits.
Yeah, I like this fan film. It sounds like it's so bad that it's good. I don't mean bad like in a bad way. I mean like, you know, it's low budget. The premise is hysterical. It's going to be just like Airplane, but in space. So I'm looking forward to this.
Yes, it's what I'm hoping for. I mean, I hope it ends up being so bad it's good, but it's going to be bad. So I'm not going to be upset if it ends up being horrible. But I think. When we do these interviews, how many fan filmmakers do we talk to who crack the jokes?
Mm-hmm.
These are funny guys. These are guys who like to laugh. And I think that it doesn't make it on film as much because nobody wants to be silly with it. But, I mean, I've seen a handful of films that were funny. Most fan films are not. I have seen some that were. There was one I saw a long time ago. Two red shirts beam down to a planet. One's the jaded old cynic who's, you know, I'm getting too old for this. And he's like, look, anything moves, you shoot to kill. And the other guy's the new rookie who's all enthusiastic about the job. But phasers are supposed to be set on sun. Look, you're wearing a red shirt, right? You want to get out of this alive, right? If it moves, you blast it. Do not touch anything. You know, my mom wanted me to be a doctor, but no, I didn't listen to her. I
had to become a red shirt.
Yeah.
It's a noble profession.
It is.
Don't last long in it.
Yeah.
When can we expect this fan film out? Do you have any ideas?
I'm hoping by the end of this year, but I'm really going to like start knuckling down and focusing on it come the spring.
Mm-hmm.
That way people can do outdoor shots. Because the thing about this project is, I have no script, I have no actors, and I have no real plan or idea where the story is going to end up, because part of it is it's like, I don't want to do crowdfunding because I don't want money. I don't want to have to deal with any of that, especially in this new era of fan film. So what I want to do is crowd filming. I want people to just, even if you just put on a red t-shirt and glue a cardboard triangle to it, that's your costume for the bit. And you do something wacky and it will get edited in. I would like to probably, you know, I'm going to give Vance Major, you know, a couple of months to enjoy his new retirement. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to start bugging him to use his little black book and get people to film random clips. And we're going to just hack together a movie with a cast of who knows how many doing who knows what. And it's all going to string together and try to form some kind of coherent narrative.
That's perfect. That's good. Yeah, it gets everyone involved. It's fun, and it doesn't matter what the quality or what it is. I think that will work.
In my head, there's a handful of scenes I'd like to see somebody film and submit. So I've got like maybe three scenes picked out in my mind.
Can you tell us what those are?
Yeah, well, first there's the whole introduction exposition. I'll need two people to play admirals. One's just the head of Starfleet Command. The other's the head of the engineering corps. And they have a little phone call talking about how the war's not going good. And everybody's talking about Garth and his defeat in a recent Klingon skirmish. And then Garth up and disappeared and nobody knows where he is. And they're kind of worried because the Klingons have launched Task Force Dagger to hunt him down. So after they end that little phone call, the head of engineering takes out his disguise kit and slips on some glasses. That way he's not recognized, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's seriously all it is. He's wearing glasses. He might hum the Superman theme while he puts them on. It's a shoebox and somebody scrawled disguise kit with marker on top. You know, it's we're talking very low budget. And he calls the admiral right back. And the admiral says, "Who are you?" And then he says, "Who I am is not important. What is important is who I am." And he says he's the head of Section 31, the secret part of Starfleet, and he's going to send out his agents to try to find Garth before the Klingons do. And then bada bing, bada boom, that's the premise. The other scene I'd like to see, I want a Jack Benny chase scene. If somebody's got a bunch of friends, if you're listening to this and like you have friends who can dress like Klingons and you can dress like a Starfleet officer, just have the Klingons chase you. You run around a tree a bunch of times, and then you stop, and the Klingons keep running, and then you run the other way, and you basically do a and you have the Jack Benny music playing.
Mm-hmm. Yakety sax.
Yakety sax. You play yakety sax, like speed up the video so you're moving really fast. And there's going to be – and I don't know if I want to do it with a guy running around on the ground chased by Klingons or if I'd like to build – little horrible models out of Legos where you can see the fishing line that's holding them in place and you're just moving them around like puppets. but I want a Jack Benny chase scene so bad.
You just do both. Have both in the film.
I would like to have both, like twice. Do the same gag twice. I think that, why not?
Yeah.
And do it the same way. Like the ship circles a planet a bunch of times and then it flies up to the pole and the Klingons keep circling the planet and then it flies away and they go after it again. Same gag.
Yeah. And what's the third one?
For the third one, well, I've got two more that I'd really like to see. I would like a bunch of Klingons on their battleship to make a threatening phone call to the Federation and then prepare to fly off for battle and sing a Klingon battle song. Mm-hmm. And I would like them to be singing Row, Row, Row Your Boat. In Klingon.
So
Chov, Chov, Chov me gosh.
So if anyone listening speaks Klingon and knows row, row, row your boat, get some of your friends together and record that.
Yes. And that'll be one of those Klingon songs of battle.
Preferably drunk, right?
Yeah, drunk works. I think you kind of have to make this work. Anybody doing this sober is not going to have – they're going to – it needs. I want to make the kind of movie where when you see it later, it's like, oh, my God, I'm never buying tequila again. What was I thinking? Or if you do it sober, I want this. When you see this movie, I want you to think, I really need to start drinking.
Mm-hmm. All right, what's the fourth one?
I'd like to see a planning session with Starfleet Intelligence. And I'd like it to be Admiral Foreman, Admiral Hyde, Admiral Fez, and Admiral Kelso sitting around and talking plans.
So reenactment of that 70s show?
Yes, the 70s show circle where the camera keeps swinging to one person after another, and they're trying to plan the Federation strategy for the war. And they need to be pretty much acting like those guys.
So I know this is a family-friendly podcast, but in that show, you know, they always have a certain cloud of smoke around them. Is yes. that what you want?
I leave that up to whoever films it.
Just don't say anything about it?
Yeah. I mean, they didn't say anything on the show. They were very subtle with it,
yep.
you know.
Yep.
If you want to be making some pasta sauce in the background and you need extra oregano, that's on you. But those are the scenes in my head that I think would be amusing and humorous, but that's like, you know, 10 minutes of footage and it mm-hmm. requires people, and I'm kind of out in the boonies, so I'm not really around people in person to do this thing in a complicated way.
Mm-hmm.
But I figure if I open it up and anybody can submit anything, and if you submit it, it'll make it in. I want to do crowd filming and not crowd funding.
That's kind of like what, in a way, what Vance did with his films, with, you know, talking to a computer screen, and anyone could do it. So that's kind of in that same vein, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm totally ripping off Vance's idea, and I'll even list it that way in the credits. This idea was ripped off from Vance Major.
He'll like that. He told me yesterday he listens to our podcast. Still, thank you, Vance. And so I'm sure he'll get a chuckle out of that.
Yeah. And I mean, my ulterior motive is I'm trying to lure him out of retirement with my evil, wacky humorism. But no, I will probably be bugging him from time to time with tips and tricks and pointers. And I've got to find a decent video editing software that is free. So that, you know, that this is going to be like a no budget. If you want to spend your own money on doing your thing, you do that. But well, I'm trying to get people to avoid having to spend money because I think it's like a long time ago, it was kids playing with sticks in the backyard and they got filmed. And that was the original set of fan films. And then production quality became a thing. And the ability to have production quality, even for a random guy filming in his garage, I mean, it made for great films, and I totally respect what I've seen. I'm not trying to say those guys have ruined it with money, you know, money. I want everybody who's made a fan film to be able to submit that fan film to a studio, and they'll be like, dude, you want a job? We'll give you a $10 million budget to make a movie about something. I would love to see everybody go on to big success in acting professionally, if that's what they want to do, or just, you know, to be happy with what they've done. But at the same time, I think it scares off a lot of fans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know how to swing a hammer, so I can't make a Star Trek movie because I can't make a Star Trek set. Somebody thinking that is going to be like, well, I can watch it and I'd love to do something like this, but I'm in Oregon. I'm not in Oklahoma.
Hey,
I'm not in Ticonderoga. Yeah, it's like, is there a nearby film studio where you are?
No.
Exactly. So you'd have to, you know, come up with a few grand and build your own to make a fan film. And that's intimidating. And I think a lot more people want to make fan films and they just don't want to end up doing something that people hate and make fun of and look bad. So I'm trying to sabotage that by making something that is bad. It's like, we're trying to be bad. It's like,
be proud of it.
Yes, I'm going to put it on YouTube. Oh God, that was so horrible. My eyes bled. It's like, awesome. Thank you. Someone gets it. No, I'm insulting you. Dude, I insulted myself by making this. What are you going to do to me? Really?
This is great. I think this will be a really great idea, and I think a lot of people will really respond to it positively. So I think you should definitely make some posts soon and see, the response that you get.
Absolutely. I'm just waiting for winter to end so that people will feel more like, I want to go out and do something. It's springtime. It's warm. It's fluffy. Let's go do something wacky. What are we going to do? In April, I'm going to an escape room. I'm going to do one of those escape rooms in Baltimore. That's going to be my thing in April. And my other thing, either also in April or in March or whenever people start submitting random clips, I'm going to make this fan film.
And it will be a roaring success.
It will be something.
It will be something.
I may be the person that finally gets Ed Wood an Oscar. This movie could be so bad they will take one look at it and say, oh my God, this movie makes Plan 9 from Outer Space look like Citizen Kane. So we're going to give Plan 9 the Oscar because of Bill Allen's fan film. That's if that happens, if Ed Wood gets a posthumous Oscar because of what I did, I will feel like it's a success. My fan film has changed the world. Not for the better, not for the worse, just for the weirder.
So for free film editing software, if you really want it to be truly low budget and really bad, there is a way to still download and use Windows Movie Maker. I did that a year or two ago, or whenever Windows 10 first came about. This is before I had the Adobe suite. And I was like, oh man, I've been using Windows Movie Maker for so long, and now I can't have it on Windows 10. Well, I should check just in case. And so I went on the internet, and oh, I can download it a certain way. I can use it, and but it was just so bad. I got so tired of it that I had to switch to something else. So if you really want it truly to be just god awful, get Windows Movie Maker. It's so awful, so limiting, so simple that it will truly do your film some good old bad justice to it.
I may have to look into that. What I'd kind of like to do, and I may need to talk to somebody who's an FX wizard, because I've seen a lot of demo editing software where they you get full service out of it, but it puts that watermark across the image. And I think for a couple of scenes, I'd like to add that, and I'd like it to say the editor is a cheapskate.com. That's going to be the watermark, kind of obscuring part of the image.
That
I
would be
don't know how
great.
to add a watermark to something though, and and part of me is also toying with if people are sending me their footage, I don't want to have a watermark blocking off somebody else's work because, I mean, I'm not making a film where people are putting their heart and soul into it, but I am making a film they're putting their spleen into, and the spleen is the funniest of the organs, but it deserves respect. So I don't want to smear something like that over someone else's footage because that might be rude. But if anybody wants to make their own watermark and have some kind of silly gag included in their clip, feel free to do that. I mean, if you want to take one of my weird ideas and run with it, run with scissors.
You might what you might be able to do is create like a title, put it over the clip, and turn down the opacity on it so that it's almost see-through, and then you can write whatever you want. Excuse me, write whatever you want, and that I'm thinking maybe that's a that's a really easy way to make up a watermark, maybe.
Yeah, I'm definitely gonna have to. I'll be learning quite a bit about this. I mean, I watch DVDs, and I still kind of prefer DVDs to streaming because DVDs give you bonus features, the behind the scenes interviews, all those shots and explanations of, we did this effect by shaking the camera, and we didn't tell Sigourney Weaver it was going to explode, so when she screamed, it was because she got fake blood in her eye and it really stung, I love those little tidbits like that, and I love the behind the scenes stuff. I mean, it's part of why I started doing this podcast with you because, I love hearing those stories. I love hearing the nuts and bolts of it, and Now I'm going to find out if I've heard enough to actually go out and do it myself.
Mm-hmm. So maybe this is a little too early, but do you have a sequel in mind? Is it going to be like Airplane 2, or are you going to kind of go the route of like the Naked Gun series?
I haven't even thought about a sequel because I'm still worried that I'll get like one clip. It'll be some guy filming a thing where he says, "Bill, this idea is stupid. Don't make this movie." But honestly, I would love to do follow-ups, but if I do a follow-up, I would like to try to get a cameo by a Star Trek actor. Mm-hmm. And I would want them to say, "Who are you? What are you doing in my house? I'm calling the police." And I'll just throw that in the middle of the movie somewhere, and that's their cameo.
I think you had brought that up in a previous interview. I think you said George Takei.
Yes. It's an old gag, and I reuse it a lot. And I think he'd be the guy with a sense of humor to, you know, send me a clip of him telling me, "Get out before I call the cops."
Uh-huh.
Of course, I could always show up at his house with a phone and have him say it for real, but then I'd never be allowed at a Star Trek convention ever, and that would be bad. So I really don't want to actually scare anybody.
Well, I'm just now remembering that interview where you mentioned that was actually with Bill Boxler in January. So what we could do is, since Bill Boxler has met George, has a rapport with him from his early days of interviewing him, you could just get Bill to ask him for you.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Is there anything else that you need to say about your awesome film?
I don't know. I mean, off the top of my head, that's the general gist of it. I don't know if I'd actually even have a Garth in the movie.
Mm-hmm. I kind of like the idea of not having Garth, or maybe at the end or something, you see his backside. Or, yeah, you know, it's like he's walking away. I don't know.
Yeah, do like a Waiting for Godot thing. Or yeah. Garth is going to be the Robin Masters of this. And if somebody has an epic mustache and you want to do a Star Trek Magnum PI clip, we can definitely do a bit where he's Robin. He never shows up. You never see him. But the movie's all about him, even though he's never in it. You know, even if it's just some talking head somewhere, "Yeah, I saw him. He was buying things at a dollar store. But we don't have money in the Federation. He found an old Monopoly game. I don't know what he did." I don't know how to end half of these jokes. Humor is – I'm good at just making random silly comments. But scripted humor, to really pull it off and sell it, is very, very tricky.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what makes Airplane such a great inspiration, because I just recently watched the movie Airplane was based on.
Which film was that?
It's called Zero Hour, and it was made in 1957. And what's weird is, I mean, it really is the same plot. Food poisoning on an airplane, desperate need to get to the ground. The only guy who can land the plane is Ted Stryker, who's got a little bit of a PTSD issue from flying during the war. And it was a dead serious movie. I saw there was a clip on YouTube recently where they actually did sort of an edit, and they would interpose scenes from the actual movie with scenes from Airplane, because a lot of the dialogue is lifted.
It's the same. Yeah.
Straight up from it's straight up a remake of this movie, just done as a parody.
Yeah, that's what I'm reading right here on Wikipedia. That it's uses parts of the original screenplay almost verbatim.
And they just worked in some gags.
Yeah.
"How soon can you get on the ground? I can't tell." That's the original line from the movie is, you know, how soon can we land this plane? I can't tell. And in Airplane, they followed up with, "Oh, you can tell me, I'm a doctor." But in the original, it's just, "I can't tell. The weather's too bad. We have to get clear of the Rockies before we can land."
This probably would get you in a lot of trouble, but then you could like, you could lift, maybe with someone's permission, their fan film scene or something. I don't know. Maybe that's an awful idea. But you know, so you could do kind of a parody of what Airplane did to Zero Hour.
Yes, absolutely. I would. I mean, I've thought about it. I figured once we get to be big and famous with this podcast thing, I might get Vic Mignogna to play Garth. He's like the one of the big names, and it's like if I can't get Vance to do it, I want to get Vic to do it. But I want if I have a Garth, I don't know if Vic can do crazy eyes though. I'd want somebody to do crazy eyes. If we have a Garth, he has to cackle madly.
Now taking auditions for Mad Cackles and Crazy Eyes.
Yes.
Which do you like better, Airplane or Airplane 2? And why?
I'm gonna go with Airplane.
Yeah. Although Airplane 2 has William Shatner.
Airplane 2 has William Shatner, and that scene with the view screen and the door was fantastic. And I
Yeah.
loved Shatner's performance. But Airplane, I mean, Robert Stack doing comedy. And there was so much that was poured into Airplane that just, I mean, even the subtle details in the background, the red zone and white zone people arguing over the baby over the speakers, all the little subtle tiny things going on. I mean, you have to watch that movie more than once just to enjoy all the little nuances. And part of what Barbara Billingsley speaking jive. I mean, the Beeves' mom speaks jive. Come on. A lot of what made Airplane 2 so great was being able to reference Airplane 1. Hysterical woman back in the courtroom going through the same thing again. Looks like I picked a bad week to go crazy. I mean, so much of what made Airplane 2 great was because Airplane 1 was awesome. So I'm not the kind of guy that's always going to say, oh, the original is always better than the sequel. But in this case, I got to give it to Airplane.
So that's what you can do with your sequel, is you can play off of your first one and have those little subtle jokes in the background. That'd be cool.
Absolutely. I mean, if I successfully pull this off and I get a taste for filmmaking, there was another project I might do, but it's not Star Trek related. And then I'd come back and do a sequel.
Can you tell us what it is, maybe?
Yes, if I pull this off and this works and it ends up being great, I would like to do a remake of Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. But I want to make it look like a dead serious documentary about the horrors of GMOs. And I want to do something where for the first 20 or 30 minutes, you think you're watching another of those. This is why GMOs are bad. And eventually things will be going on in the background. And some people will clue into the fact that, oh my God, this is Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. But I don't want it to be obviously Attack of the Killer Tomatoes until you're, two-thirds of the way through it. Then you're like, oh my God, I'm watching Attack of the Killer Tomatoes as a serious dramatic documentary.
That'd be funny. So I know that usually you do the lightning round.
Yes.
I guess that was my lightning round, except in long form. So I
Yeah.
apologize. I can't think of things off the top of
Oh,
my
that's
head.
okay. I'll give myself a lightning round. Who do you prefer, Kirk or Picard? I prefer Kirk. What's your favorite starship design? The refit style of the Enterprise from the classic movies, followed closely by Discovery. I don't know why.
Wow.
It's grown on me. I don't know if Discovery's number two or number three, because honestly, that's a funny story about my past. When The Next Generation originally aired, I missed the first 10 or 15 minutes of the episode. I was late getting home from an event, so I missed the intro to the episode.
You missed
My
the
first shot of the Enterprise was when it was in orbit around the planet, and it's got that, ooh, the sleek new nacelle design, the aerodynamic body, and this stupid, tiny, dinky little saucer on top. And I was like, what were you thinking? This show deserves to fail. That is horrible. It's like, I mean, up to that point, I mean, yes, I'd been a Trekkie, but I was sort of a general purpose geek more than I identified as a Trekkie. But in that moment, my first thought was, what did you do to my ship? And I think that's the moment I kind of officially became a Trekkie first and foremost. I mean, mm-hmm. Star Trek had always been a part of my life. But that moment when I thought, what did they do to my ship? And I was offended. And that was horrifying. It's like, they're going to kill Star Trek with this. That's the ugliest thing I've ever seen. And then the starship flew off and reconnected because the saucer is detachable now. And it reconnected to that saucer. And oh my God, it looked so much better with a proper saucer on it. A lot of people didn't like the new the Galaxy class because the saucer looked a little too big. It looked top heavy. The proportion was off. But since my first look at it was without a saucer at all, I like it with a saucer. It is so much better that way.
Mm-hmm.
So that is sort of with Discovery as being my number two, number three, somewhere in that tied for second slot.
Good lightning round.
Good lightning round. Two questions and a strange anecdote. All right.
Here we go. All right. So back to the question of the week. What was the name of Captain Kirk's nephew that almost died? George, Sam, Peter, or David?
Oh, God. And this is a really tricky one.
Thanks, Steve.
Yeah. Because if I remember correctly, his brother's name was originally Sam.
Mm-hmm.
In the reboot movie, they called him George. And part of me wants to say they did that because his nephew was named George. But at the same time, I'm kind of also, what was that fourth choice?
David.
I'm kind of, see, David was the name of his actual son.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's throwing me. So it's like, I'm going to go with George, and I've probably got this wrong.
Well, according to Steve and according to Memory Alpha, it's Peter from Operation Annihilate.
Okay.
So let me just make sure, though, because that, yeah, that's a...
No, that's probably right. I mean, it's a brilliantly done trivia question because every name is connected to Kirk's family.
Yeah, it is Peter Kirk. Yeah, really well done question.
That is a fantastic... That threw me because George was... the rebooted brother, just seen briefly. Sam was the original brother. And they never even said it was his Kirk's brother. They just, the guy named George, but in an earlier clip, you saw that was Kirk's brother. And in the classic series, Sam was his brother's name. And that's why fans were kind of thrown off when they called him George. And then David was the son of his kid. So I should have picked Peter because it's the one I couldn't make a connection to as far as being part of Kirk's family. But all the other names relate to Kirk's family.
So there you go. That was question of the week.
And I got it wrong.
Hey, there's a first time bad for everything.
No, it was a brilliantly written question, though. It threw me for a loop.
Yeah. Well done, Steve. So, Bill, thank you for letting me interview you. And, We'll post some links up. It'll be good. We'll get some people to audition for you.
Absolutely. And remember, kids, this is what happens when we don't have an interviewee lined up for a day. So, you know.
So let us interview you so we don't have to interview each other.
Yes.
You can find us on YouTube and iTunes. And remember to follow us, like us on Facebook. That'll do, Pig. That'll do.